Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2008 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
This is the real title. The Seven Success Habits of Homeschoolers. And that changed because we've been working with Franklin Covey, and there's a trademark issue, but they've been helping us with the book. They've been helping with the title and stuff, so not to do that. They've been great to work with. So this is the official title, The Seven Success Habits of Homeschoolers. If you want to email me later, my email address is speaker@alisonmoresmith.com. AlisonMoreSmith. So you could contact me, and websites, but you can probably tell from the domain. By way of introduction, I've been married for almost 23 years to my dream man, Dr. Samuel Smith, and I adore him. We have six children. Our youngest is four, and he's insane, and he's absolutely crazy. His life is throwing things off the balcony, flooding rooms, and then he comes to me, and he squishes my face, and he says, "But Mom, you just love me," and so I can't be mad, and he knows that. And I have an older boy, and then four older girls. My eldest is 20. She just finished her junior year at BYU, and she... I just flew her 2 weeks ago. I just took her to Los Angeles. She is doing an internship with Disney Studios. She's a film editor. That's her major, is film editing. She edits BYU's True Blue sports show. That's her money job at school. And they had 3,000 plus applicants, and eight kids got the internships. And homeschooling. Because she had time to develop those interests that she had. They didn't teach that at the public school. So that's big, wide range of kids and big family, depending on how many kids you have. So we're in our 15th year of homeschooling. As she said, I have a book coming out this summer, hopefully soon. And actually, you know Richard Paul Evans? He wrote the Christmas box and some of those. He actually did the foreword for me, so that's very nice of him. We began homeschooling on a dare for my 7-year-old, and homeschooling was probably the last thing I ever wanted to do. And I could, last night at dinner, some of the women I was with asked me my homeschooling story, how you started homeschooling. And I'm telling you, I won't go into it here, but weird. That was the last thing I was going to do. But aside from all, maybe some of the cultural weirdness that exists stereotypically of homeschooling, it's weird because it's different. It's still not the norm. It's still kind of an off the beaten path, kind of a choice. And it's hard to find a model. How many of you here were homeschooled yourselves? Oh, none. Usually I get one person. Most of us weren't still. It's not a second generational thing for most people. So most of us, our model of school is usually public school. That's what we know. That's what's familiar. That's what, and to try to switch to something that really is fundamentally completely different is very difficult. How do you know what to do in a model that you're completely unfamiliar with? And maybe you haven't even seen it very much from other people. When I started, I had no friends who were homeschooling. I didn't even really know anyone who did it. So I didn't even have other humans to look at for a model, except for some of the things I'd seen when I was a kid, which were not didn't lend to homeschooling. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is not a new method, it's not a new curriculum, it's not a package I'm trying to sell. It's just underlying principles. When I started, I was lost. And what I wanted to do was to kind of have a fundamental set of principles or ideas on which to build my homeschool. I don't think there is a right way to homeschool. I don't think there is a right method, because I think it's very, very individual. And I've probably studied every single method you've ever heard of, And I think everyone is flawed. In fact, I think most of them are quite flawed. They might work with some kids in some situations in some families, but I think overall they have lots of problems, and people have problems applying them because they're not just a fundamental basis. They're kind of a specific application. So that's why I want to talk to you today. To help you build a foundation on which to choose your method and curriculum and what's going to fit with your kids. So habit one is to change your mindset. Just try to step out of the box. Try to see, like, you know, as Covey would say, a new paradigm for what you're doing. Try not to impose on your homeschool all the things you think education is, because it really isn't usually what you think it is. At least coming from a public school perspective, there are lots of things that we kind of put onto the education model that really have nothing to do with education. Raising your hand to go to the bathroom is not really part of education. Making a bulletin board with certain things isn't fundamentally a part of education. So think about all the things that maybe you have decided are part of homeschooling and try to figure out why you're doing it. Just to give you a couple of examples, when I started homeschooling, I was very, very, very schooly. And that was something I found out I didn't need to do. So think about why you are homeschooling. Really think about it. Why is it that you're starting and what is it you're trying to accomplish? One of the things I have seen a lot, when you homeschool for very long, people call you when they think they might homeschool or something's not working. They'll call you, what are you doing? And tell me how to homeschool. Tell me, how do you homeschool? And there are three things that I see over and over and over again with people who are started out and who are struggling. And so I just want to say, try to avoid the three things that I see most often cause the problems. The first is that people mimic public school, like I said, because that's what you know. I go to Education Week at BYU every year. I've been doing that for 18 years, I think. And when I finally gave in to my 7-year-old who was harassing me to homeschool her, I told her we'd do it for 1 year. I got on this plane to go to Utah. We lived in Florida at the time, and I thought my head was going to blow up because I had no idea what to do. And so I spent the whole plane trip making a schedule for school. You know, 8 a.m. math, 8:45, you know, and had recess and had lunch, and I bought a bell. I bought this bell that I was going to ring, and that was going to be my homeschool. I felt, at least it made me feel better. I felt like I had a plan. I had something, and that was okay to start with. I have a friend who, about a year or so after I did, I'm sorry, I've been sick, if you're wondering why I'm all raspy, but I'm trying to talk. I had a friend who started homeschooling, and she, every morning at 8 a.m., she had one little girl who was 5. They would go to the front door, and they would, I'm trying to trip on myself, and they would hold hands, and they would walk around the cul-de-sac, and go back in the front door, which was now the school, and they would do school, and at the end of the day, when the bell rang, they would go walk home around the cul-de-sac and go back home. And I didn't tell her I thought that was really weird, but, and I don't know if they still do that, I hope not, you know, 15 years later, but that's what they started doing, and even to me at the time, so be careful about what you impose and how much you bring from school. And how much you copy that model. Try to look outside of that model. The second mistake I see is that people throw away everything from school. I see lots of people who had such a bad experience or have something so horrible that they think about the whole model of school that anything that it remotely resembles school, they won't do because it's evil and bad. And there really are some good things that you can use from school, and it's okay if it works for you. So I kind of see these two extremes, the complete model of school and then the anything schoolish. You know, I will never, ever, ever use a textbook because textbooks are, you know, evil incarnate and because they come from school. So if it works, let school things be part of your school if it works. And the last thing I see is that people cling to kind of the latest homeschooling fad. And if you homeschool for very long, it's kind of like fashion. Kind of recycles and rotation. You'll see, you know, they used to be pedal pushers and then they're low riders and they come back in, or hip huggers, and it's the same stuff, but it's kind of repackaged and remodeled and in a new book or a new presentation or a different speaker, but it's kind of the same thing with maybe, you know, maybe it takes a little bit from here. And sometimes the models work and sometimes they don't, but you might hear from someone, oh, this is perfect, it's the best, it's the right way. And the other thing that's interesting about that is often someone who's promoting it to you, this is what I find a lot, the people who sometimes are most vocal, sometimes they have really young kids, and so they haven't really done it for like the full stretch of kids, and so they think it'll work, but they don't know. The second thing I see is that they haven't done it very long, and the third is that often they don't really do what it sounds like they do. They've modified and modified and modified, but you don't always hear that. You kind of see, oh, here's what I do. The better way to homeschool, in my opinion, is to question everything you know about education. Question what you hear and what you read and what and wherever it comes from. This is the hardest thing. We, you know, again, last night at dinner we were talking about sometimes people will call and they say, tell me how to homeschool. And it's impossible to tell someone how to homeschool. You don't know their kids. How do I know what to do with you? But they want the comfort of having kind of this package. Here's how you do it. And I can't give that to you, and no one can. You've got to be willing to sit down and analyze and read and research and study and find out what fits you and your kids and your situation, what fits with your values, and you've got to weed through that yourself. That was the hardest thing I did, and it probably took me 2 good years to really get a solid idea. Maybe I was just slow. I'm not saying it's going to take everyone 2 years, but to really get a solid understanding of what you need and what will work. You've got to do that inner work for your family, and you know them better than anyone. So take input from people. I worked on the staff of America Online, you know, over a decade ago, back when that was really the whole internet was AOL. And I worked at Family Computing, and I found the homeschooling forum just when I was thinking about starting to homeschool. And I got so much good information from talking to people, but I had to weed through that too, just like every book. I think every homeschooling book I've ever read has had great information and lousy information. And you just had to pick and choose and pull stuff out of there. And the last thing is, when you find something that you think you're going to try, decide if it's really logically sound and if it aligns with your values and does it fit with your family and your current situation. If your family's small or big, it makes a difference in what you do and what will work. If the ages of your kids, who's teaching it, like what your interests, your personal interests are, the home situation, your neighborhood, all those things can really affect whether or not something works for your family, whether it's a good fit. And test it out before you apply it. My oldest daughter, when she was much younger, came to me when I came home from Education Week. I guess I hadn't realized. You know, I'd go to Education Week and I'd go to. Have any of you ever been to Education Week? BYU. It's a week long, just classes and classes, and I'm alone by myself, just me. And I would come home with notebooks full of notes of all the wonderful. I was going to be a perfect mother and a perfect person, and our whole lives would change now that I was enlightened. And I'd come home. And I didn't realize that my kids really noticed that, okay, I had all the plan. I had the plan when I came home, the perfect plan for the family. And I came home 1 year, and my daughter said, what's the big new change this year, Mom? You know, what are you going to make us do now? And I thought, oh, my goodness, she really, you know, and it lasts about 2 months, and then you go back to what you used to do because, you're too tired. But before you keep throwing new stuff at your kids, do some analysis yourself. Because you can really throw out a lot of the ideas if you really think about it before you ever impose it, you know, the guinea pigs over and over. Oh, the new program this week, it's exhausting to kids to just kind of over and over change things. So do some work first before you throw something at them. And continue to question what you're doing. Things will change over the course of your homeschooling. And as your kids change, things will change. And some of the things that used to work won't work. And you can throw them out and try something else. So keep looking. Don't decide, here's my plan for life, and we are rigidly going to follow up forever. Because that you need to just keep rethinking and keep looking at those things. It's an ongoing process. Habit 2 is to define well-educated. I'm going to read you a quote. This is from Alice in Wonderland. Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here? Alice asked. Well, that depends a good deal on where you want to go, where you want to get to, said the Cheshire Cat. I don't much care where, said Alice. Well, then it doesn't matter which way you go. So long as I get somewhere, Alice added. Well, you're sure to do that if only you walk long enough. So if your goal with homeschooling is to have your children grow up to be adults. They will. You don't have to do anything. You can just throw this habit out. If you know, a bowl of Fruit Loops a day and you know some air, and they're going to turn 18 eventually. So if your whole goal is really just to get adults, they'll turn into that, and you don't need to do anything. If you have anything of a different idea of what success is or where to go, then you need to have some kind of a plan to be likely to get there. So think about what success looks like to you. It will be different for every single person. But what if you could have the perfect ideal? Here's my newborn. When they're 18, this is what I would hope for. Because you know, your newborn doesn't have much of an idea of what they want. And even five-year-olds, you know, they want to be a fireman or something. They don't have a great idea of what they want to be as an adult. But you do. And you have experience and you have a God-given stewardship over them. So decide what it looks like to you. Do you want faithful, you know, strong members of the church? I'm not usually an LDS, so that's nice to be able to say that. Do you want kids who are strong testimonies and go on missions and get married in the temple? Do you want them to be good parents, solid citizens? Do you want them to be entrepreneurs or to have a good job, be able to support a family, to be independent thinkers, to be politically active? What is it that you think makes a great adult? What is it that you think makes a, would be a great outcome to your homeschooling? You know, if you called all the shots, if you could make it perfect, what would you do? And around that, determine a set of general, flexible, long-term goals. How to reach that? This is a really important point to me, is to make them general and flexible. For example, music is very important to me. I'm a singer, and I used to be a violinist in my previous life. But music is very important to me, and so I want my kids to be musically literate. But what does that mean? To me, being musically literate is a general, flexible, long-term goal. By the time they leave, I want them to be musically literate. That doesn't mean I have to say, okay, starting at 6 years old, you will study piano for 2 years and then take violin for 10 years from Itzhak Perlman and study 8 hours a day and perform with this. That's a very, very rigid, specific goal. I could have an idea. Maybe pick a stringed instrument. And there's sometimes a good reason to do something like that. Pick a stringed instrument and play it, you know, depending on your resources. Maybe it's pick any instrument you want. And we'll try a couple of different instruments. Most people can't invest in a harp and a piano and a cello, and you know, but maybe give them a range of instruments they could choose from. Maybe you want to give them the option just to study different composers from different eras. Maybe you just want to let them listen to lots of music. There are lots of ways to kind of move that long-term goal forward without being very specific. Because the problem with being very specific and rigid is it may not fit your kid at all. And so you've got this kid who hates the violin, but you've told them they have to play the violin. You know, maybe you're letting them play bluegrass, and they have electric violins now, which I wish I had had. That's totally cool. But maybe you think it's really flexible to say, well, you can play classical violin or bluegrass, but maybe they just really hate the violin and they want to play a different instrument. So try to make it something that gives them enough choice that they can find something they love. I have found by doing this that I really have never experienced a child who hated one of my long-term goals. They may not want a specific path to it, but they've always been willing to, oh, sure. If someone says they hate science, to me that's absurd. You hate all science, you start listing some of the sciences. How can anyone hate every single branch of, you know, or study of science? But they might really not like dissecting stuff. So do they have to dissect, or could you find a different way for them to, you know, be scientifically educated without being very specific about this textbook with this particular thing? So make some general, flexible, long-term goals. And adjust the course as you go along. Like I said, your kids get older, and we have this joke in our family that, you know, baby teeth fall out and then the big teeth grow in. When kids reach puberty, their baby brain falls out, and it takes like 2, 3, 4 years for the adult brain to grow back in. So that's when they're kind of like teenagers. But as their adult brain grows in, they start, and you know, neurologically that's true. If you see pictures of the brains, teenage brains look like toddler brains. Anyway, I love that. But they start having a real solid idea of what they like and what they don't like and what they want to do. And that's the time to really incorporate, you know, change the plan to fit them much more personally as they grow up and as they go on. You might find that there are better ways to reach the same goals, or that the goals change altogether. So keep adjusting that to your kids as you learn more and as they learn more about themselves. Habit three is to organize and prioritize. And actually, I do a whole class on this. I'm not doing it here, but I do a whole class on this. So this is going to be very, very general information. So, you know, email me. And the book has a lot more detail, because I don't want to just, like, throw this at you without any information. But I think it's, to me, I grew up in, like, the scriptural house of order. And I don't know, my parents had a little week-at-a-glance calendar on the wall, and they had a grocery list. And that's all the paper or planning stuff I ever remember seeing. And somehow my house was always perfectly immaculate. And my parents never missed an appointment or a schedule or a meal. I mean, everything. And they never had to do anything to do that, as far as I could see. It was just the way they were. And I was not genetically created the same way. And after I got married and we were in school, and I just said, what in the world happened to my life? I don't know how my parents did it. So I had to really work at kind of organizing myself. I like order because I grew up that way, but I don't naturally fall into it. So what I've done is I've created systems. I have six systems that I have really, really, really worked at to make them fit me, that are workable for me. But so I'm not going to tell you about, what I do specifically, because that won't probably fit you anyway. But I'm going to tell you what the systems are. The first is I have a system to organize information, and that's paper bills, minutia, schedules, dates, you know, appointments. My best resource for that is a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen, because I've just kind of personalized his system. Love it. But that's what works for me. So find a system for yourself to organize all that stuff so that you're not missing things and forgetting things and losing things. The second is stuff, organizing your stuff. And I distinguish that from kind of the paperwork and everything. This is kind of the stuff in your kitchen, your makeup, your jewelry, your clothes, the games, all that stuff that's all over your house, the toys, in a way that is efficient and easy so that your house can be clean. I just think you live better and you learn better without chaos. I think chaos, you know, some people say they work better in a messy office, and frankly, I don't believe anybody who says that. I mean, there are different ranges. My children think I'm much too picky about cleaning, which kids do when they have to do all the work. But I think there are ways to make it much easier to be organized. Who do I like best on this? I don't know. I've used lots of different resources on this kind of stuff. I like, oh my goodness, Organizing from the Inside Out. I can't think of her name. Anyone know her name? Morgan Stern. Organizing from the Inside Out is one of her books. Denise Schofield is an LDS author who has some good stuff. You might really like those, but find a way to organize the stuff in your house. Have some kind of a system for home cleaning and maintenance. And that's different from organizing the stuff. That's actually taking care of it on a regular basis. I love Jeff Campbell's speed cleaning stuff. I actually do that. I have the aprons and everything. Well, my kids do it, I should say. My kids do most of the cleaning. Because it's efficient and it's thorough. And that's what I want. I want a really clean house, but I don't like doing it, so I don't want to spend time doing it. So find a method for you that's quick and thorough. Don Aslett also has some great stuff. He's a great guy. He's an LDS guy and a great guy, too. So quick and thorough to get done with stuff, unless you just love spending time cleaning. So the fourth one is meal planning and preparation. Oh, I hate cooking. If you love cooking, you can just do whatever you want, but I hate it. It's just this tedious, ongoing, never-ending, stupid thing. And I'm going to tell you a little bit what I do, because I get most questions about this, and it's easier for me to show this. This is going to be real fast, so I'm sorry that this is going to be real fast. So I hope you can email me if you want me. I'm going to be uploading some of these things on the website. But the hardest thing for me was that it took me until about 2 years ago to get the system worked out, because I hate it, first of all. I didn't even want to deal with it. But I had this criteria. It has to be quick, because I hate cooking. It had to be inexpensive, because I'd rather buy jewelry or something than food, you know. So I want it to be inexpensive. I should have said inexpensive, but I want it to be healthy. I don't do a lot of baking or things I don't like, but I like low sugar, low fat, lower foreign carbs. I like it to be, you know, so I don't look like that, but I really do eat like that. So I want it to be nutritious. And the last one was what made it hardest, is I wanted to rotate the stupid food storage. And okay, I don't have like a 20 pounds of barley or 500 pounds of barley in my basement. So to me, food storage turned out to be, when I got the system worked out, I do have wheat because I do make wheat flour. But other than that, my food storage is lots of canned stuff, really, because I don't use 400 pounds of honey. Wouldn't even know what to do with some of the stuff that's recommended. So my food storage, I don't depend on a freezer because we lived in Florida for too long, and whenever there's a disaster, you have no power. So I don't depend on the freezer, but a lot of canned stuff and some dried stuff, that's what we use. So this is what I did. This is my menu system. If it works for you, great. If it not, the math works. I'm not going to explain the math, but it works, so trust me. First, I make 1 week's worth of breakfast menus. So there's your breakfast thing, and there's our breakfast menu. Now, if it's someone's birthday, Mom, can I have pancakes instead of oatmeal? No, Monday, we have oatmeal. This is just an example. But we do the same thing generally every day, so I don't have to rethink it. I don't have to, plan it. That's what we do. Then I make a week's worth of lunch menus, and it's the same every day, too. And like I said, we're not absolutely rigid, but I have a week's worth of lunch menus, and they stay pretty much the same. Now, this is the tricky part. I do 5 weeks' worth of dinner entrees. 5 weeks, because most people want more variety in their dinner than breakfast. I don't care as much. So we do 12 entrees. Of those 5 weeks, 12 of the entrees only use food storage. I can make the whole dinner with just food storage. Does that make sense? Just canned or something. So 12 of those 5 weeks are just food storage. And the remaining 23 are whatever you want. And then the side dishes are the same each week. Like on Sunday, we might have always peas and tossed salad every Sunday. No matter what the entree is, we have the same side dishes. So I don't have to think about that because I just hate planning it again. So it looks something like this. Here's your 5 weeks. And there are the menus. Now, I kind of cheat a little bit because on Saturday, we have meat leftovers. We don't do this too much, really, because we have a big family, so we don't tend to have a lot of leftovers. But in theory, we kind of just make sure we eat everything out of the fridge so there's not leftovers. And a Friday is date night for us, so my kids eat TV dinners or something, or frozen burritos. But so that made it easy. I kind of did that because I didn't want to plan another day. Those menus were all I could stand. So we kind of have our menus there. Now, this is the thing. Those are the side dishes down at the bottom. So once you have that, make a shopping list of your 12 food storage-only meals. Just make a shopping list of the 12 food storage-only meals. And multiply all those ingredients by 30. If you buy all those ingredients, you have 1 year of food storage for dinners. Okay? You'll have 1 year of dinner food storage. And if you if you had a crisis and you couldn't buy food, you could use those 12 rotated over and over and over for a year. If you don't have a crisis and you just incorporate it into the regular menu system, you rotate your food storage every 3 years. So it's rotated and it's used, and it's kind of normal food because you plan the menus around that. So that's my system for that. The next system is a laundry system. I used to just hate laundry because it was everywhere. It was all over my house. It was, I had the worst history of laundry rooms, and so I had to sort in the hall and fold it on the coffee table and on the dining room table, and it was everywhere. If the doorbell rang, hide, we're not home, because it was so embarrassing, and I hated it. And the bigger my family got, the worse it got. And so now I have a great system. It's kind of just an assembly line, but partly it's because we did build a custom house last time, so we kind of got to. We have a huge laundry room, and it's custom designed. But you can still look at each part of the process and make it less painful, less of a burden. I actually really like laundry now, and someone asked me this about 2 weeks ago, so I figure it takes me 18 minutes a day, 6 days a week, to do the laundry for 8 people. And I kind of go down there sometimes and pretend to do laundry because I just like it. I have a beautiful laundry room, and now I'm doing laundry, I can't come. Because I like it. But you can make those things less painful and less of a burden and get them out of your way so it's not this horrendous thing in your life. The last system is schoolwork. And this really happened because I was pregnant with my 5th child, and I thought I would die. I was just overwhelmed. And I get really organizational. My friends know that I get, people have the nesting hormone, they say that people, you do such weird stuff when you're pregnant. I organize stuff when I'm pregnant. And my A friend of mine called when I was pregnant once and said, what are you doing right now? Tell me. Don't lie to me. Tell me honestly. And I was alphabetizing the spices in my cupboard. Because I do that. I do weird stuff when I'm pregnant. But this is something that I came up with while I was pregnant. So it's a little bit extreme. But it made me feel better. I felt like suddenly I was going to have this fifth baby. And my kids were pretty spread out. And I couldn't keep track anymore, even what we were kind of generally doing. I would tend to be, if I had maybe a couple of kids, I would tend to be what I call more of a relaxed homeschooler. I'd kind of go with the flow. And that's what I did when my first kids were younger. But as I got more and more, it just became, I don't even know what the flow is. I don't know where we are or what we're doing. And we could go months and months without doing some things I thought were really essential. So I felt like I really needed a plan. Now, if you don't need a plan, then ignore this. But I needed a plan to kind of keep me on sane and to not worry so much. So the first thing I did is, when we can, the last couple of houses we've had a specific homeschool room, and that was nice just to have a place to generally put the stuff so it wasn't all over or lost or who knows where it is. I really like that. It's not necessary, but I really like that. I like to have school supplies, plenty of them, and readily available. I have one daughter who eats pencils. She chews them while she works. And she chews down a pencil a day. It's the weirdest thing. So we have hundreds and hundreds of pencils always. Otherwise, we have nothing to write with because they're always these little, it's disgusting, but that's her thing. So plenty of stuff so that we don't run out. We're not looking around or people don't have to use Belinda's chewed pencils. References. You know, sometimes when you're, invest in good reference material. You can get lots of it online now. So if you have a computer, you can get a lot of that stuff pretty easily now. But have stuff so they can look things up and they can find the information they need. And don't make it a pain. Make it as easy as possible for them to find their stuff. I like to have a place for each kid. We had just in our school room, we just have a bookshelf for each of them so they can put their own personal stuff so it's not all mixed up. We like the binders, like in Well-Trained Mind. That book, Well-Trained Mind. Love that book, by the way. But they have a lot. We kind of do the binders for every subject like that book recommends. You have a place for the long-term storage of stuff that's away from the other stuff, so it's not in your way. Up high, you know, in behind stuff, but you have it there, but it's not in your way. And the last is the study plan. And this was the thing I did while I was pregnant. And it's kind of specific. Like I said, it's a little bit more, it's more specific than I actually do it, and it's more specific than I like, but it's what works for me right now with a bunch of kids at home. I took those general flexible long-term goals I talked about at the beginning, and from those, I created kind of a year-to-year plan. I kind of said, now I think this is a good idea anyway. I don't think this is too specific, because I think you may not stick to it exactly, but if you have this kind of idea, by 18, I want this, I promise you, if 17 and a half, you say, well, let's get back to the plan, you don't have enough time to get there. So it's a good idea to kind of generally be moving toward your goal as, you know, the years go by and not try to jump in at the last minute. So we kind of have a general year-to-year plan. It's written down specifically. We don't follow it specifically. Each kid is very different. My oldest daughter begged me to teach her to read, and I wouldn't do it because the schools in Florida, the teachers didn't like the interference from parents, and I wasn't going to interfere. And finally, about 2 months before kindergarten, I said, okay, fine. And I bought Hooked on Phonics because it's the only thing I'd ever heard of. I don't love the program, but I'd never heard of anything else. I bought it, and she learned to read in 2 months. When she went to school, she could read fluently. And she was a voracious reader, and she read, I mean, you know, Little Women when she was 6 and a half. I mean, she was just the real one, not the abridged one. I mean, she was just a voracious reader. And so I kind of thought, okay, well, that's kind of a good plan. We'll do that. And the teachers all lauded me and because I was a great mother. I didn't tell them I used phonics because they used whole language down there, and they didn't like phonics. But I would just say, oh, yeah, well, she's just really smart. And when my second daughter was about the same age, I thought, oh, we'll try to teach her to read. And it was the most painful thing I have ever tried to do in my life. Jessica, you know, we short A, and Jessica, who's my oldest, she would say, bat, fat, cat, pat, sat, and she'd read through the words and we'd be done. And Belinda, who was my second, would say, bat. Mom, is that like the bat that when we went to the science museum and they were hanging down, they were real spooky and scary like at Halloween? Or was it the bat like at the baseball game when Dad was playing and that little boy pushed me in the amp? And it went on. Every word was this essay, and it went on and on and on. And, oh, I was just, can we just read next, you know, next word? And so I kind of gave that up for a while. And I went back about every 6 months or so, and I would revisit Hooked on Phonics. And no, and it was just, it was awful. And this girl was the girl who liked to make stuff. She would go in the garage and she would build and she would make stuff. And she would make these, she made a hat factory once where she had hundreds of hats that she made. And she would make costumes, head to toe, dress her siblings in these big elaborate costumes, just out of stuff in the garage. That was her lab. And one day she came in very frustrated and I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "You know those people who made Big Thunder Mountain?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "They must have had a lot of stuff in their garage." Because she was trying to make Big Thunder Mountain in the garage and she couldn't do it. Well, this girl, 7 and a half, so she's this is, you know, 2.5 years after my first kid. And you're starting, you know, and you're starting to get a little bit worried, you know, that maybe you're totally failing. And she came in and said, "Mom, I can't make the stuff I want to unless I can read the directions." I said, "Oh." So she says, "Oh, I want to learn to read." And about two and a half months later, she could read well ahead of grade level. And it was just because it was her time. It was her moment. So, like I said, these schedules change with every kid. But I like to have a general one in mind, even though it does not fit every kid, even sometimes remotely. So then from that, I made a daily schedule. And I'm going to show you this really fast because it's a little bit embarrassing, but I'm obsessive when I'm pregnant. I got an Excel and I made my little spreadsheet. And it was like this. That's not really it, but it's a fake one. But I made this schedule, and we have never in 8 years, we still have one, and it's different every day because of my kids' weird schedules, and we've never in 8 years actually followed it, like, exactly, but it still kind of gives us a framework for the day, and we always mess around with it, but I still kind of like to do it because it gives us kind of a framework. This is about kind of what we're, you know, we might get really involved in something and so not do something else, but it kind of gives us an idea of what we are trying to do that day, and I still like that. Habit four is everybody wins. What time do you have, Pam? Because my clock is different from yours. What time do you have?
2:12.
Okay. So I have till 20 after, before question answer. Okay. This habit is everybody wins. Homeschool to me is not about where you school, even though the name sounds like it. I finally realized a couple of years ago after kind of talking to different people that I don't think it has anything to do with where you are. It has to do with who's in charge of school. And so homeschooling is taking back the control and taking back the power to the family instead of having to be a school board or a principal or whoever. It's your family who best knows the kids and who understands their needs and desires best and who's most affected by it. So you're in charge. And everybody wins to me means that you can work with your kid. It's not based on somebody else. You can work with your kid to have something that everybody loves. You can reach these goals in a way that you feel good about as a parent and that your kid really, really loves. And you can decide together what the best option in each subject is. It's just about options. And so here are some of the options that we have used. There are a few textbooks I really like. I'm not a big textbook person, but there are a couple that I really like and use. And sometimes I've also used text outlines. I maybe get the outline of a book and kind of go from the outline, do my own thing, but use that as a basis. There are unit studies, internet or computer courses. In Utah, they have a thing called K-12 that is actually paid for. You don't have to pay because it's a taxpayer-funded thing. And so, like, my kids have taken driver's ed using that instead of going and sitting through hours and hours and hours of peripheral stuff that the schools make them take. They can just do it on the internet, which has been nice. You can do a co-op group, a community class. You know, I don't know, in my area, lots of places, the city will sponsor kind of community classes that they might hold at a school at night or at a university. Do y'all have that kind of thing in your area? Where you can sign up for all different classes, and those have been really fun. Local businesses often offer great classes, apprenticeships, local performances and exhibits, colleges and universities. Y'all probably know that BYU offers some great online courses. Some of them, actually, I've heard aren't very good. Don't tell the people over there. But some of them I've heard are very good also. So yeah, I would ask around about any of those kind of courses. But I've heard some good things. Some of them are free. They have some kind of personal development ones that are free. Board games. I love, love, love games. And there are lots of games that are very educational and fun. Music is a great hook for learning just about anything. I'm a singer, so I'm a little bit biased, but music is a great way to remember things. One of my oldest was in her freshman year at college, and she took a World Civ class, and she aced all. The teacher gave them this geography pop quiz just to see what they knew, and she blew the teacher away because most of the kids don't know geography very well, because it's not taught that much anymore. But she knew it from these songs we'd learned when she was 7 or 8. These little geography songs, and she remembered them all. You know, that many years later. Summer camps, there's some, you have to watch out for summer camps, in my opinion, because sometimes they are bad. Sometimes they're daycare, really. It's just a substitute for daycare. And there are kids who are in there all summer long and not very nice because they're bored and they hate it. And sometimes the directors are high school dropouts and whoever they could get to do it. But look around. We do BYU camps now that we live in Utah. We do BYU camps every summer. And their diving camp is run by the diving coach of the BYU swim team, the BYU diving team. So look around. Sometimes you can find some great things. That my kids love them. Two of my kids are going to EFY next week, and one of my kids is going to Young Ambassadors. Young Ambassadors. This is the Young Ambassadors and this daughter, but Young Ambassadors. You know, Young Ambassadors is like BYU's musical theater kind of group, and they do a big thing every year that she did it last year, and she's doing it again this year. It's just her dream. So look around. You might find some great ones. And even public and private schools. My kids, when they start seminary, in Utah, seminary is at the school. And in some places in California, Oregon, and Idaho, some other places, it's like that. And so I encourage them to take a class. They're already at the school just across the street. I say, go see if you can find a class you like. And they don't always do it, but they have found some really good schools. I mean, really good classes in there and had some really good experiences that I really couldn't provide at home because of the resources and the numbers of people. So look to those things. You have 4 minutes for 3 habits. Habit 5 is it's all about time. You get your kids back. You have about 15,000 more hours with your kids for homeschooling than other people do. And you will probably find people who say things like, how can you stand to be with your kids all day and things like that. And frankly, if they didn't go to school, you might be able to stand them longer. I don't usually say that, but I love having my kids. My daughter in California, it's killing me. I don't tell her that. It's a great experience for her, but I hate having my kids away. I love my kids. And I'm not saying that other people don't, but I love being around them. And being around them so much has defined our relationships. We've been able to do things and have a closeness that we couldn't have without being together so much. My kids, I'm the first person they tell stuff. They tell me all the stuff that all the other parents don't know, which is very interesting to me. Because I'm not a kind of a laissez-faire. I'm kind of a strict mom. And I didn't know if that would turn into the buddy mom, that they'd come and tell me. And they still do. They still come and tell me all the stuff their friends are doing that they shouldn't do and all the stuff that's going on and their opinions about things. And I think they do that more than they would have otherwise. We just have a very great relationship. And even though my kids were normal, So far I've only had girl teens, but they are normal teens. I don't have this homeschooling, oh, my children never ever fight, and they love each other, and they're very respectful. My kids are normal teens, and they're hormonal, and they do weird stuff, but they still talk to me. And what a blessing that is. What a blessing that is. Because they're home, you can have vacations and recreations that fit your family. We would go to Disney in February when we live in Florida, when no one's there, and it's actually decently pleasant weather, when everyone else had to go in July, which is absurd. You can do things that fit your family. We do kid dates and kid trips that we couldn't do otherwise. My husband will take my kids on business trips, and we have lots of one-on-one time. With teenagers especially, to have you there when they want to talk, not when your quality. I don't think quality time happens without quantity. And when you're there, when they feel like it, you can talk to them. I saw it. Habit 6 is synergy. And to me, that means 1 + 1 = 3² because homeschooling education affects so many parts of your life. And you can, I decided I liked homeschooling. I wanted to make it as attractive as possible to my kids. Once I decided I liked it, I let them pick if they want to go to school. They can, but none of them have ever. They take classes once in a while, but they've never wanted to go full time. And I like that. I like having these options. And so I like to do fun things, do interesting things that they're interested in to make it more interesting to them. So some of those things are field trips, going to the library, service projects, which I think service projects are paramount for self-esteem. That's a different topic altogether, but I think you feel better about yourself when you're not thinking about yourself, when you're focused on other things. especially for teenagers. Clubs, we've created lots of clubs and done things that the kids were interested in. We like to do kickoff events and ending events. Like when we start, maybe we start a study of history, we will do a big event, go to the Renaissance Fair, something that'll be really fun to kind of start that out. Spend a lot of fun time together. Sometimes we schedule in like game time. Use your expertise to serve the homeschooling community. I've done a bunch of choirs. Until last year, I did a homeschool teen swing choir. So whatever you're good at, offer it to other people and bring other people in. That's a lot of fun for your kids. Use your connections in the community to set up things for your kids. And schedule downtime, which is a funny one, but I found out that my kids, we school all year round, and then we kind of take off most of December for Christmas, and we take off whenever a cool thing happens. But I found out that they like to know this particular week in April, you can do whatever you want. They like looking ahead to that, just like kids in school do. So even though my kids don't spend as much formal time in education, they like to have that time they can look forward to as well. And the last one is to be a model in progress. Habit 7 is be a model in progress. Homeschool is not about perfection. It's about progress. And it's about lifelong learning. It's about teaching your kids to love learning and to continue to move forward with momentum. It's really fundamental that you be a model of that. To me, that does not mean, you know, I heard someone tell me that they wanted their kid to do something that they would do at first and just kind of they would do it and kind of ooh and on, try to get the kid to look, isn't this fun? Look, you want to do this. I'm not going to do algebra again. I did it 30 years ago. I'm not going to do it again just because my kids need to do algebra. But I don't think I have to do it again for them to be interested in learning. I think I can learn new things myself and be a model of continue to move from where I am. I don't have to go back to where they are and do it. If I'm reading a lot, it really is true that my kids pick up on reading, not necessarily the same books I'm reading, but they pick up on reading and those kind of things. So I want to be a model, not a model of stagnation, just always be a model of progress, always moving forward. I think sometimes we get lost in our kids and we forget to improve ourselves. And I think that's the best motivation to them. You do have time. And I could do a whole thing about how you really do have time, but look at what you do and spend some time getting better. And I suggest that you do it in, this is actually my next class is all Habit 7. This is one of my favorite things to talk about. But have a system where you set goals and you move forward. And you do it not just in the thing that's your favorite or the easiest, but it's you continue to move forward in all areas. So you're not just, I have 200 scrapbooking goals this year. No. You need to have all different kinds of goals, you know, spiritual, physical, mental, and keep moving forward so you can become a model of moving forward and being a better person. So create a system that fits you, that's personalized to you. I'll tell you what I do in the next class if you go over there, but something that you can keep moving forward on. And create a system that fits you. I just want to, oh, I forgot to fix this. This is a quote that I love, and it's kind of become my motto, so I just want to share this with you. It's, life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, wow, what a ride. That's kind of my goal. I really want to just use myself up in doing great things and enjoying my family. I used to say that I don't think homeschooling is the right way or the righteous way to educate, but I've actually changed my mind. I think it's really the only sound way to do it because it's the way that lets you consider your child first and foremost. It lets you use anything that's best for them at the given time. So I hope that you can use these 7 habits to have a really amazing education for your kids.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.